remember telling you.
Yeah, he told me.
Some of his stories are amazing, the death threats, because he was trying to push it. You were born in, where were you born?
I was born in West Point, Georgia. And we moved to a little small town by the name of Lafayette, Alabama. It's going that way to Auburn, south, going to Auburn, and I lived in Lafayette all of my childhood.
Were you an only child? Or
no, I have three brothers. I have three brothers. I have one that's older and two younger. And we grew up during that civil rights period. I remember when we integrated the high school, when they closed the movie theater, when they integrated the one and only restaurant in Lafayette.
Well, no. It's a little closer just in case. Now, when they... So, they were segregated movie theaters.
Mm-hmm. We only had one movie theater now. A little small town like Lafayette would only have one. The whites were downstairs, the blacks were upstairs.
Oh.
And blacks could never go downstairs. But one day, some teenagers decided that they would do that. And one of the teenagers happened to have been my older brother. They went downstairs. The manager called the police. The police took them to the city jail, but they didn't arrest the children. They called the children's parents, or if they didn't have phones, took them home. And they closed the movie theater. It never reopened again.
Mm-hmm. What did your parents do? Were they...
My father gave my brother a good lecture and told him that that was not a wise thing to do. And he didn't say that it was the wrong thing to do. It was just not a wise thing to do in that small of a town, because they were going to create a major problem. And a major problem was created, because they closed the movie theater. And with Lafayette being as small as it is, then you didn't have anything to do on a Saturday night.
How many boys were there? Was it all boys, or was it boys and
girls? Just boys. I think they didn't have any idea that they would close the movie theater down. They were just kind of being mischievous that evening. To see what would happen, to see what it really looked like downstairs, mm-hmm. since we were never allowed to go down there.
Right.
Because they had a little side entrance that we had to go in.
Did they have separate restrooms upstairs?
Yes, we had restrooms upstairs just for us. There was no reason for us to ever go downstairs.
My mother, in fact, the other night mentioned that to me, and she said that they seemed to have more fun in the balcony, and she always wanted to go to the balcony.
Well, wanted to go to the balcony to see what was going on in the balcony. Well, we always wanted to go downstairs to see what they were doing downstairs.
Right. That's unbelievable. Well, when did, a lot of places, it started, I guess, in 57, integration with the big integration of the state, but it didn't reach certain areas until the 70s.
It didn't get to us until I graduated from high school in 1967. In 1965, they came out with freedom of choice. Lafayette has two high schools there.
Mm-hmm.
I walked by a white school every day because I lived within a mile of school, so that meant the children walked to school. Walked by the white high school every day, could never go in it until the last 2 years of my high school. And then I didn't want to go, because that would have meant that I would have been graduating with children that I really didn't know. Okay. And so I selected to stay at Chambers County Training School, where I graduated from, with all of my friends. But one of my younger brothers, I have a brother that's a year and a half younger than I am, he selected to be one of the five black children to graduate from Lafayette High in 1968.
There were only five.
There were only five of them. And the graduation ceremony it was integrated. It was in the same room, but those black families that had children there, all of them sit together. The whites didn't even sit on the same side that they sit on.
Well, When your brother went, did he ever talk of problems?
Oh, yes. Oh, they had riots every day when they first integrated Lafayette High. The policeman was called every day. Every day. Well, we were not as bad as Arkansas. They didn't have to escort the children in. They had sent letters out and asked children, parents really, where their children wanted to go, and our parents allowed us to decide ourselves where we wanted to go. Did we want to go to the White High School, or did we want to graduate from Camas County Training School? And he decided that he wanted to go there because they had something, a lot of things that our high school didn't have. They had a science lab. My brother is a civil engineer, and they offered more advanced math classes at Lafayette High than they did at Chambers County Training School. So he decided that he wanted to go.
For a high school student, too, a conscientious decision. Was it the same brother that was in the movie theater?
No, this is different brothers. I have three of them. Three of them, okay? It was my oldest one that was in the movie theater, and the one that's next to me, not my youngest one. Now, my youngest brother is the kind of the black sheep of the family. So when Jim decided to go to Lafayette High, my parents said that there was going to be trouble, and they wanted him to be prepared for it, because any decision that we've ever made as children, if we decided we wanted to do something, you were going to speak it out no matter what. And my mother, come in!
Let's see. So what grade were you in? You were in 11th grade?
Mm-hmm. When integration first started in Lafayette, yes.
Okay. Let's see, what was the next question I had? Some studies have suggested that integration was, I just did a paper actually on it being an economics, that certain,
the phone's not broken.
They were saying that black families could not live in the same school, in school zones when it came time to busing. Now, were you in school when they were doing the busing? Or I guess that was in the 70s, wasn't it, when they tried the busing?
Mm-hmm. I graduated from, I was already gone, but I've heard some horror stories, you know, what went on in Lafayette when, you know, first they introduced freedom of choice. Mm-hmm. Five children, it didn't work, okay?
Right.
So, in the city did something to force integration in Lafayette.
Right.
Instead of having two high schools, they made one into a junior high school, and the other was just a high school. It was not grades 1 through 12. 1 through 8 went to what used to be my high school, which was Chambers County Training School.
Right.
All the other children were bused to Lafayette High. And Mother Shay, the police was there every day to make sure that when the fights broke out, policemen arrested the children. Parents were called immediately to get the children. And the first year of integration in Lafayette, very stormy, fights every day. And something else that happened, some of the whites in Lafayette that could afford took their children out of the public schools, built themselves a private school.
The only white children
that was still left there was parents of children that worked in the textile mills that couldn't afford $2,000 or $3,000 a year to send their children to the private school.
Okay.
What were the conditions like
Chambers County Training School? I remember when the school got a library. We didn't have a science lab. We had a home economics department. It was more like they were teaching us to, more like a a vocational school today. Like they were training us for some kind of job. We didn't have a lot of advance. I don't think we had. I remember taking Algebra 1 and Geometry. We didn't have Trig, and we didn't have Algebra 2. Because we didn't have any teachers there to teach it.
Right.
If they did, they didn't offer it to us. I even remember when we got the lunchroom and the gym was one building on the sides. They had the table because I carried a brown paper bag to school most of my life. I hate bologna sandwiches, and I hate peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Well, my father was telling about how he remembers when they had a stove. He went to one school, and he said there was a stove in the hallway, and they had a mother that would come in every day and cook for the students on the stove. Because one of the black schools that he was trying to get integrated, and they didn't have a lunchroom. There was nowhere for the students to eat.
We had a lunchroom and a gym combined together, and on days that it rained, it created a major problem when they built the gym. When it rained, we didn't have PE at all because it was always outside.
Right.
Always outside. Summer, winter, it was outside. And well, at that time, I don't think we really noticed how cold it was because we were having so much fun being outside with other children.
Right.
And then when they built this gym, we just thought it was the best thing in town. A gym and a lunchroom combined together, and there was a kitchen facility, a little room that was built within the gym for the cooks to come in and cook.
But when was the first time that you knew that black people were treated differently? Did your family sit you down and explain it? Was explained at all? If it wasn't explained, how did you know?
How did I know?
I mean, I guess it's pretty much treated that way.
How did I know? It was something that was always, I always known as a child that blacks and whites were treated differently. My mother was a maid for this white woman. We could go over to her house and play with her children, and sometimes her children would come to our house and play with us. So we always played with white children. Black and white children have always played together. And it was not until someone said, one of the children, and I don't remember how the incident came up, said that we were not as good as they were. And when this incident happened, because I went home crying, day when someone called me a nigger. And I went home and I asked my mother, and I looked in the mirror and I asked her, I said, am I a nigger? What is a nigger, mother? She said, baby, you're not a nigger. Someone is mispronouncing the word. You are a Negro. You are a beautiful little Negro girl. We may not have everything that. And the person that she was working for at the time was Mr. Tarver. Mr. Tarver used to be the president of the bank in Lafayette. She said, we may not have all of the money and stuff that they have, but his children are not any better than my children. I grew up in a very strong household in believing that anything that you want, if you work hard enough for it, you can have it. My mother always, and I have a very strong mother, not saying that my father is not, but my mother was always that person that could kind of see beyond what things truly were. She always instilled within you this positive feeling. And we always knew that both of our parents were there, no matter what kind of trouble we got in, Mom and Daddy was going to be there. And it's still that way to this day. No matter what we've done, Mom and Daddy has always been there.
Did they have a, did they foresee or hope for the future, for your future, that
yes.
things would be different?
Yeah, and to give you, my mother has four children, only one daughter. My mother saved money from, come in! Yes, she's at that age. That age. Okay, my mother, probably made $25 a week in that month. But out of that $25 a week, my mother saved some of that money so that she wanted to make sure that her daughter had a formal education so that when times got better, I would be able to have a good paying job. I wouldn't ever be anybody's maid. Because she said she wanted better for her daughter than what she had. And my mother, the first year that I went to school, didn't know anything except to go to class, didn't have to worry about where the money was going to come from, because my mother had saved that money. And it was not until my senior year that I had to borrow just a little money to graduate from college. I was my mother's first child to graduate from college. And my brother right under me, he's 48. He's a year younger than I am. He graduated from Family.
And he's a civil engineer?
He's a civil engineer. He lives in Tucson, Arizona.
I get so involved now. It's like my questions don't even matter. So now, with your experience, I guess you can answer that, though. Some of these are just like kind of flowing. So you really didn't, I mean, you were integrated. I mean, you were in the integration process, but you chose not to. Did your mother and father fear for your brother at all?
Oh, yeah.
When he left to go to the other school?
Oh, yes, we all did. He came home one day. There had been a fight at the high school. Came home one day, and we lived not that far from the school. We could easily walk, not as far as you walk from the office over here to see me. Mm-hmm. That's how close we lived to the White High School when I was a child. He came running home, blood just running down his face where he had gotten, somebody had hit him, something had happened at the high school, and it almost convinced my father that his child didn't need to be up there in that. But my brother said, Daddy, I made this decision, and I have to stick it out no matter what. And he did. Now, it wasn't the first time he came home where somebody had called in names or somebody had said something. And the five black children that were there, they were kind of isolated because the other children didn't have anything to do with them.
I saw an interview on Oprah Winfrey the other day with Little Rock 7.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how they were reunited with children that had spit at them and thrown things mm-hmm. at them and the apologies and how they would share their books and how one little white girl pulled her desk next to a black man and created scandal throughout mm-hmm. the entire school. And then she was subject to
ridicule and
the students.
Yeah.
When did you said that you had played with the mother's boss's children. Now, when did that stop? I mean, did that continue on? We were saying in class that usually around 11 or 12 at that time,
yeah.
children, black and white children, were separated.
Mm-hmm. Because somewhere in there, by that time, when we got to be that age, children started noticing that there was a major difference, and that major difference was the color of our skin. And once your eyes came open and you had heard the word nigger, And sometimes it was said to you, and the little child didn't even know what the word meant. He didn't realize that it was a negative word. He was just repeating what he had heard somewhere else, maybe even at home. And once the word was said, you could never play together again.
That was it.
That was it.
The church, now you said your father was a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did they play any role in preparing you for integration or
no.
What was going on in the entire movement?
No. We had a very conservative little church that wanted us to stay status quo, leave things alone, don't stir up any trouble, because you're causing a major problem. And I truly believe that if the teenagers in Lafayette had not stirred up a little trouble, that the adults in Lafayette would have never gotten involved in what was going on.
Was the town separated? I mean, was there like one side of town was white, one side was black?
We did have a railroad, yes. It was a little section here, a little section there, and a little section here. In the little section of town that I lived in, there was no railroad track. In most little southern towns, there's a railroad track that separates the blacks from the whites.
Right.
But in the section of town which we lived in, from here back to the wall, everybody was black, okay? And it was kind of like we lived on the edge of this white neighborhood, because there was a white high school, there was a white gym, and they've always had a gym for the white children in Lafayette. I don't even remember them building it. It was just always there, okay? And on the other side, the only thing that really separated us was a road.
It's just sort of that unspoken language.
Unspoken language that you didn't. The children, as we were younger children, the children would come out in the road, we'd all skate together, ride our bicycles, and at night, we all went home. We never crossed the road, they never came over, and we never went over. We just always running in the road.
Sort of the common ground.
Yeah, it was that common ground. And you know, it's funny now that I think about it. Why didn't any of us ever go across the road? But we never did. We just played in the road, and we all would go home.
That's amazing. I wonder if it was the white parents, perhaps, maybe said don't cross over, if it was some sort of unspoken rule that you just, maybe it was just not knowing, not understanding.
Maybe so.
Now, when did you leave Lafayette?
I left Lafayette in 1967 and went off to school. Went to Montgomery. Went to a predominantly black school. Never saw any white children. Never. I think in my senior year, 1 and 2 was there because it was cheaper to go to Alabama State, and it's still cheaper to go to Alabama State than it is to go to Auburn or up to the University of Alabama.
Right.
And there were 1 and 2 white veterans there.
Now, when you got there, were there any civil rights movements, like, because I know the Selma, the March in Selma.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? Or it going on?
I remember it going on. I didn't participate in it, but I remember it going on. Just like I remember there were, something happened in Montgomery. It may have been that when I was in school, because we all know. No, it wasn't. Yeah, but something happened in Montgomery. Something happened on campus. We had a ride on campus when I was in school, and we had a ride because we wanted better food in the lunchroom, in the cafeteria. We were paying, our parents, we thought, was paying all this money for this food, and something else had happened, and I don't remember what else it was. They closed the school for a couple of days, sent us all home.
From there, we took a demonstration from the campus to downtown Montgomery. And I don't remember why. I need to talk to somebody that was at St. when I was there to find out what all went on. But I remember they closed the school because there had been major fights in the lunchroom. Had destroyed major property in the lunchroom over the food that was being served to us. I don't know why.
Well, how about the March in Selma? Do you remember the church bomb in Birmingham? Mm-hmm. That was what, 68?
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yes. Yep. And I also remember, and I felt so bad, and I asked my mother this. You remember, maybe you're not old enough to remember this, when they first started integrating the city of Birmingham and they turned the water hoses and the dogs on those demonstrators. And I asked my mother, and I went back a couple of months ago, we were talking about it. As a child, I asked my mother, what they were doing, was it so bad that they had to be treated like that? All they wanted to do was just sit down at the lunch counter and be treated like anyone else and to be able to work downtown Montgomery. Now, LaFayette didn't have a major problem like that because they only had Rogers Cafe. And it's the only place, I think, in LaFayette that you can still now eat is Rogers Cafe. And if you wanted to get any, and the people that cooked in Rogers Cafe were blacks. And now if a black person wanted something to eat at Rogers, they had to go around to the back door to get it. They couldn't go
inside.
They couldn't
sit inside?
No.
They had to walk off with their food?
They had to walk off with it. You couldn't sit down and eat it. No. And there was a big sign that said, Phillips line at the back door. You could never go in and sit down and eat. Okay? And at the doctor's office, I remember Dr. Hula used to be, before he died, was the doctor in Lafayette. It didn't have but one. There was a separate little area that blacks had to go around to the side door to go in. The waiting room there. The one with blacks in the waiting room. And on the other side, up to the front, was the waiting room just for whites. And I don't remember there being a water fountain for us to drink. You didn't drink while you waited for the doctor to see you now. But it was the same doctor.
Did the water fountains, they actually literally had signs?
Yes, they actually had real signs that said that. Uh-huh. I remember those signs quite well that said that. And the signs made it so visible that you were inferior because you couldn't drink out of the same water fountain as that little white person did. You couldn't go in the same door now.
You couldn't even
use the door. No, so it was a white doctor.
Yes.
But it's not. No, it was nothing about you had to go to a black doctor. You would be
a black doctor.
You just couldn't wait in the same room.
You just couldn't wait in the same room when you saw the white patients first.
So you might have to wait.
You waited a long time to see Dr. Wheeler. But you did eventually get to see Dr. Wheeler. And he was the same man that I've seen the world. Mm-hmm. He was the only doctor in Lafayette. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, but I don't have to rush and go.
Because I have to know, I want to ask you about Martin Luther King.
Okay.
Do you remember everybody, and I'm sure everybody in the United States, but everybody remembers where they were the day John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ask, I don't guess, most, I guess you could some, but I don't think you could probably ask a white person and say, do you remember where you were the day Martin Luther King was assassinated? Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
What was going on that day? I mean, I have ignorance right now.
Well, that's all right. The day that he was assassinated, the moment that it flashed on the television, I was at home, making up the bed, had the television on, and I heard over the news that Dr. King had been shot, and they thought he might possibly be dead.
I mean, what happens at that point? Do you think this is it? War is coming? Or?
Yes, I did. I truly believed that there was going to be a huge racial war in the United States because there would not be anyone that would be able to convince blacks not to retaliate.
What do you think would have happened if he hadn't been assassinated? Or do you think eventually somebody would have? I mean, I guess there always was the chance in everything he did.
In everything that he did.
Yeah.
And that any time he could be killed. And everything I've read, I don't think he worried about dying anymore because that possibility was always there. And I think the African Americans worried about somebody killing him all the time. And I truly believe if he had not been assassinated, we wouldn't be any further than what we are.
Nothing would have changed. Because still the mentality of most white people
had not changed. And I don't know why America, and I keep telling myself that one day before I get to be a really old lady, that skin color won't matter anymore. But racism is just as strong now as it is, as it was when I was a child. It's just the sky's the limit setting now. That's all. Since I have been teaching, I have had parents not to want their children in my room because I was black. Or I've been called a nigger a couple of times, and immediately I'll have the child go look at the word. I said, do you really know what it means? Do you know what you're saying? And most children don't. And I will ask, I said, why do you dislike me? What have I done to you? I said, now if you peel my top layer of skin off and take yours off, could you tell any difference between the two of us other than our gender? No. People, racism is something that we, the children, learn to be racist in one way or another. And to be honest with you, we are all a little prejudiced. We are all, if we're very honest about it. Because there are times when I look at things and I ask myself, and my children have asked quite frequently, Mother, if I had not been black, would I have been treated this way? Or have I pushed black children harder because I want them to succeed, because I know what it's like out there for them? And young people today, they take, especially black children, they take all of the rights and privileges that they have today for granted. They don't know how they got them. They don't appreciate them. And like this year, this was one year we happened to be in school on Martin Luther King's birthday because we were making up a day. And I asked, why would we be out of school today if it had not snowed? Why did we celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday? What did he do? And I was hurt that black children didn't know.
They didn't know their own.
They didn't know.
I'm going to flip this before it turns out. That people can think and have to think about this. When you raised your daughters, did this influence the way you raised your daughters?
Yes. Yes.
Making sure that they were.
Yes. I know it's not taught in high schools. Lizzie Norda, did you need to see me?
No.
Oh, you can have a soft drink. We don't care. I make it a point to give them that Black history that they need. I talk about it. I tell them this is why this person is so important to me. This is why this person should be important to you. And I don't teach to my children that you are better than somebody just because of your ethnic or because we all have contributed something very good, something very useful to the American society. And you should be extremely proud of who you are. And don't let anyone ever take that away from you. Bernadette's, she's my oldest child. She decided where she wanted to go to school. Alabama State was not one of her options. Mother did not say, baby, you would gain so much out of going to a predominantly Black school. And the reason I didn't say that to my child, because my child has never lived in a predominantly Black society. My child is not, she didn't grow up in a predominantly Black neighborhood. We live in an integrated neighborhood for 16 years. She is the only little Black child on her street until her sister came along. We still attend a Black church because to me, we need that foundation. We need something where my children can see our culture still thrives. The Black church has so much of this culture there that existed in the Black neighborhoods. I admit that my pastor is the Reverend John Nettles, waste a lot of time on a Sunday talking about things that I read in the paper and I get involved in things, but there are a lot of elderly people in my church that don't. And my children need to see this. My children need to hear this so that when my children grow up, my children will know where they came from. They will know that history behind how Black people suffered and died so that they can now go to the poll and vote. That Black parents suffered and died so that my daughter can go to the University of Alabama if she wants to go. Anything that she wants to do, she can do this.
Do you remember the first time talking about voting? Do you remember when you first voted?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Now, my mother got very involved in registering Blacks to vote. And so when I turned 18, you couldn't vote then. The voting age was still 21 in our state. And in 1972, when the amendment was passed, I was in Auburn. I rushed home because I wanted to vote in Chambers County because I was just in Auburn working. I rushed back to Chambers County to register to vote so that I could vote for the President of the United States. That was such a thrill to me to be able to vote because I knew how difficult it had been for Blacks to register to vote. And I remember how my grandparents went through the ordeal of struggling to read sections out of the Constitution, having to pay poll taxes in order to vote.
Right.
And during that, right before that, those Black students had gotten killed in Mississippi trying to register Black people to vote.
I didn't know that.
You don't know about the summer that college students came from northern states. They made a movie out of it. It's Mississippi Burning.
Oh, that was the
That's the movie.
I haven't seen it.
Where college students went to Alabama, Mississippi, and they registered Black people to vote.
Right.
And one evening there was these three young people. Two of them were black and one was white. They were out in this rural community and they disappeared. They disappeared in Mississippi. They eventually found them. They were dead though when they found them. They had somewhere, and I wish I could remember the name of where it was, they had been killed by the plane and buried in a dam. They had built a dam in this little town in Mississippi, and they had covered the entire car with all of this dirt, and they eventually found those children's bodies there. And it was just so important to me that I registered to vote.
And talking about the Klan, was that ever a real fear?
Mm-hmm.
In the Klan? Were they ever visible?
Yes, very visible in the Klan. They would come out and have parades downtown in the heart of the little square. There was a black family had moved across the road on the other side. And they had a cross burned in their yard. We got a couple of threats when the white high school was integrated with my brother.
Right.
And my father made it very plain to whoever it was on the phone that if anything happened to his child, that he would personally kill the person or kill somebody.
Right.
Because nothing was going to happen to his child, because all his child was trying to do was just get an education. So we knew the plan was there, and nothing was done about it. You know, this was the 60s and early 70s, and the plan, everybody assumed that everybody else was in the plan, and the police didn't do anything about the plan coming to town, having a parade.
It was just sort of a lie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did they actually show their faces then? Or did they stay hidden on the sheets?
They stayed hidden on the sheets then.
Because now they're so proud.
Oh, yeah.
They don't
even see
their faces.
Yeah,
they're
proud
of their faces.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Sarah. How are you? Fine.
You said your grandparents were now. They came, so they had all. They would have been born back around the turn of the century,
mm-hmm.
So they weren't slaves, but their parents were slaves.
Mm-hmm. Someone in our family has researched my mother's side of the family. The Lancasters were the slaveholders. That's how my family got the name Lancaster. They took the name of their master. And my grandfather, Jack Lancaster, he is now all of my grandparents are deceased. His family had been owned by Lancaster. And the Lancasters lived in Lynette, Alabama. They had this plantation there. And after the Civil War was over and the slaves and everything was set free, they kind of stayed in that area. And my mother talks about her grandmother and how they stopped being slaves and became sharecroppers on the Lancaster's plantation and everything.
So they were sharecroppers from the Lancasters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then now their parents, but that would have been your mother's parents.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the same area then, right? They were
Lynette, Alabama. The Lancasters are still in that area.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I have. There's 100,000 questions that I can. I guess that's it. Oh, Rosa Parks. Yes. Now that's why, because I kept thinking Montgomery. And she was in Montgomery, right?
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. But now I wasn't in Montgomery. I was a little girl.
Right.
Okay. But now I remember it so well. My mother talking about it. That there was this woman My mother thought she was such a big hero. There was this woman that refused to give up her bus seat. And she was arrested, though. And see, my mother said, and I guess she was kind of my mother's role model. My mother would talk about Rosa Parks when she was emphasizing how important it was that you have good moral character and you be a strong person. And I got the opportunity to meet Rosa Parks. Yes, here in Anniston, one year for Emancipation Proclamation, SDLC had her as their theme speaker. She wasn't a good speaker, but it was just wonderful just to be able to see her and to have her autograph. I guess that's one of the major achievements in my life, meeting Rosa Parks.
She was like the first in the entire thing. Mm-hmm. I heard a comedian one time say that we knew once Rosa Parks did not get her butt up off of that seat, war was coming.
Mm-hmm. Rosa Parks was... And she wasn't really trying to get the civil rights movement started. All she was a quiet lady that wanted to sit down. And, you know, it's so hard for children to believe today. And as a champion, I build on the civil rights movement. It's so hard to get children to believe that people were separated just because of their races back in the 50s and 60s.
They don't see it.
They don't see it. And they can't relate to it because they've always been together. Always. And when I tell them, I never went to school with any white children.
Oh, you can see that. Do I need to tidy up my room?